Hi everyone, this is Lindsay Kenny, and I'm here with Pat Carrington tonight, Dr. Pat Carrington. And I'm excited about tonight's class because it's really kind of a prelude to my interview with Dr. Bruce Lipton, which as this moment, which is live, that interview will be aired tomorrow. But if you're listening to this past July 18th, then that interview is going to be listed both on my media page and on the radio page, and I'll give you that link for that later. But I thought it would be interesting to go through some of the things in Dr. Lipton's book and from the interview and highlight some of them, because I got so excited reading that book, I could hardly stand it, because he talks our language, you guys. He talks about us vibrating and positive thinking and the law of attraction and how our limiting beliefs affect us. When I had my husband Jack read the book ahead of time to help me with interviewing him, so he'd pick up things I might miss, and he was reading it, he was really enjoying it, and he goes, Lindsay, he sounds like you guys, he sounds like you, he talks the same language as you guys. I went, well, thank goodness, yay, I'm glad to hear that. And it's true, he's like one of us. For those of you who don't know Bruce Lipton, and I imagine just about everybody does. He is a cell biologist. I've always said a cellular biologist, and he said to me, well, that means I'm a cellular amoeba or something. So he is a biologist focusing on tiny cells and their effect on us. And so he's really into quantum physics, to the law of attraction, to our limiting beliefs, to what makes us who we are. And he uses the same language that we do, and it's very appropriate for this kind of class about law of attraction to bring his information as a scientist into the discussion, because he validates what we say that a lot of people think is woo-woo, you know, the general public. But he really starts at an early point in his book talking about the way, about how this kind of evolved. And I'm going to just really go through some things in the book. I'm actually going to quote some of the things that he says and comment on them so that you guys get it. And I really am promoting I really want to promote his book, and there's no monetary backlash to me whatsoever. I just really believe in it. It's called The Honeymoon Effect. The Honeymoon Effect.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's his latest book.
And I'll tell you.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'll tell you in a little bit how you can find that easily as well, because I set up a tiny URL that you can get directly to it, and without, you know, you get to it at Amazon.com. But I'll tell you what that is in just a little bit. I'll tell it to you now. It's tinyurl.com, The Honeymoon Effect. And it's with an E, effect, not F, that. Don't go there now. Just wait.
No, I didn't get that.
TinyUrl.
You say first.
TinyUrl.com.
The word tinyurl.com.
I'll spell it up. TinyUrl.com/ The Honeymoon Effect. All one.
Good. No, I got it now.
That'll take you to his page for this book on Amazon.com. And again, that's not an affiliate link. That's just, you guys, everybody should read this book. It is kind of about maintaining that wonderful feeling that you get when you're falling in love and when you're on a honeymoon. But it's so much bigger than that. He talks about it as how to change your life and how to save our species. Save the planet. It is so much bigger than, you know, about romance. And you'll see when I start into this. And so that's how I want you guys to look at it. He's just using relationships as sort of the metaphor for all of this. We've been talking about his wonderful relationship with his wife, Margaret, and his beliefs about relationships and things and how much they affect us. But I want to start at this point where we talk about things vibrating. And he said, you know, back in Newtonian physics, when Isaac Newton talked about and discovered the atom, that was the smallest particle, or we believed it was the smallest particle in the universe, and that it did vibrate. It had a vibrational field in it. So, but now, with quantum physics, we've discovered, well, you know, with microphones and the engineering that's available to us today, that there are fundamental subatomic particles that are made up of a gaggle, which is a gazillion, bazillions of smaller, strangely behaving particles. And they include one word that's specific to us, and that's the word quarks. There's what they call bosons, fermions, and quarks. And quarks are the little bitty, the tiniest of particles that are fathomable. Well, they really aren't fathomable even any more than understanding what a million light years is. It's beyond our imagination. But he talks about...
spell it? Which is spell it for me?
Q-U-A-R-K-S. And we talked about that in the ICanAttractAnything.com series. You know, that's what the beginning of our I Can Attract website was. And it was in that Attracting Exactly What You Want series. I think it was maybe the fourth or so of the sixth lessons and webinars that we talked about quarks and Travis Taylor, who's a physicist, a rocket scientist, he calls himself, and he talks about quarks. He was watching Oprah Winfrey when she had the guys on there from the Secret. His wife was watching, and he sat down and listened to it while he was eating the sandwich and went, oh, this isn't woo-woo stuff. This is scientific physics stuff. This is quantum physics. This isn't, they're making it sound like it's, you know, just something else. There's a reason behind why you attract things. And he explains that, and he uses subatomic particle quarks. And so Bruce Lipton talks about that as well, and he's saying, so these tiniest of particles aren't things. They are energy. They are tiny little inside of the atoms and the nucleus and all of the smallest things. They are little spinning vortexes of energy. And then, it's a strange energy. It's a kind of electricity. It's a strain energy, a vortex that is not physical. He said, for those of us that are not used to thinking of this sort of thing, non-scientific people, he uses an analogy, Bruce Lipton does, of seeing a tornado on a highway. You know, the Midwest has seen a lot of tornadoes right now, and you could see a tornado, but what we see in that spinning cloud of energy is the debris that it's sucking up. It's the, you know, the cows and the fences and the dirt and the bushes and, you know, swimming pools that get caught up in that vortex of energy. That's why we can see it, because it's got matter in it. It's got stuff. But if you took that stuff away, you wouldn't be able to see the tornado, but if you drove through it, you would sure feel it, because it would pick you up. You'd become part of that debris. So that gigantic tornado is just spinning energy. It's energy. So he says that's a big physical way that we can see it, but that's what everything is made of. So that means molecules, which are made up of atoms. So but let me back up. That understanding of that is, so the atoms are made up of out of those vortices of energy, and that means molecules, which are made up of atoms, which are spinning, are the vortexes of energy as well. So cells, of which he is a scientist for, are made up of molecules, and therefore molecules are just energy, and then that energy goes on, and we're made up of molecules, and we're made up of cells, all of which is just spinning. So he said that's why we say it really isn't there. It is just spinning and vibrating in a way that forms patterns, so that you're seeing the TV and the rug, but it's really energy that is spinning in such a, that is so tightly woven and done that you don't recognize it as moving. Of course, you see it as actually matter. Well, I don't know that I've had it explained in a way that made sense, but that's what quantum mechanics is. And it has profound implications on our personal lives, because if once we understand and accept that fact that we are fundamentally energetic beings, now this is a quote from from Bruce Lipton's book. He says, once we accept the fact that we're fundamentally energetic beings, inextricably connected to the vast dynamic energetic field we are part of, we can no longer view ourselves as powerless, isolated individuals because we're part of the big picture. So he's saying we are all connected with this energy. We're connected to everything else. It's just part of the universe. So he likes to use examples, which I really like. He uses, you know, real life examples because some of this is so ethereal. He gets into some things that are beyond my non-scientific head, but always gives real examples like the tornado theory. And one of them is to understand energy. He said, when you drop two rocks into a pond, they create a ripple, little miniature waves. He said, these ripples are not the energy created by the dropped rocks, which I thought they were. They're not created. The ripples aren't created by the dropped rocks. They are physical complement to the shape of the invisible energy. The water ripples are created by the force of moving energy. I mean, think of it as
they don't correspond really to the shape of the rocks then, but to the invisible energy. The invisible energy.
Exactly.
I did not know that.
Yeah, you say, remember the tornado with the Porsche driving through it analogy. So the water, as it travels, the shape is the energy as it travels through the water. So the water isn't moving. I always thought the waves were water moving. Now, the giant waves that crash on the beach are different because they are being disrupted. But if you drop a fisherman, drop a bob in the water, you know, a thing that floats, and then you drop a rock in the water, those bobs just float on top. They don't move back with the waves. So a fish down there isn't moving because you drop a rock in. He can feel that energy in the water, but it's not moving with him. So he goes on to explain that this is laying a foundation for where I'm going to go, so hang in there with me. So he's saying that if you take two rocks, this is a really interesting thing about law of attraction. He said, if you drop two rocks of the same size from the same height at exactly the same time into a pond, then they will ripple. And so at the point at which the ripples are made by each of the two rocks, the ripples converge. So let's say you drop them in a foot apart. At some point, those ripples will converge. He said,
you mean the edges of them hit the
edges kind of bump
of
into
the other ripple. Okay.
Right. And he said, when they do that, one point in their convergence, you will see that the power of the entangled energy waves is amplified because the height of the now combined waves is greater than the heights of the individual ripples. I never noticed that, but he shows examples in his book. So two vibrations, if you think of it as vibrations, that are exactly alike, dropping the same size rock at the same time in the same water, they converge, the ripple or the energy increases. So he's saying the additive power of the wave produced by the two entangled energies is a phenomenon called a constructive interference because it amplifies the size of the wave. So we're energy, so when we're vibrating at a certain vibration and we meet somebody that vibrates at our vibration, our energy is increased.
Oh, yeah, and you feel it instantly.
Exactly.
With the other person.
That's right. He said this phenomena of canceling energy waves. Oh, he's saying, I don't want to skip the other experiment. So if you drop one rock that's slightly later than its twin, so it's vibrating at a different level because its vibration is not as new. So you drop one, a second later you drop another rock. That second rock is going to have a different vibration than the first one. He says you won't see the amplification of the energy where you saw it in the first experiment because those rocks are out of sync. And that is called destructive instead of constructive interference. It's called destructive interference. Two things that are a different vibration bump into each other in kind of a negative way, and it dissipates the energy. So that phenomenon accounts for an energy. It's called destructive interference because it just diminishes the energy or the wave. So he says it doesn't take a quantum physicist or a relationship expert to know where this is going. He said, given the nature of quantum physics, this constructive interference that we know as a, you know, in lay people, we use this term all the time. It's constructive interference, a scientific term. We call it good vibes, good vibrations. Our nature's way of telling you that you're in the right place or with the right person. You know, when you meet somebody and you go, we just click. I feel like I've known you all my life. They're vibrating at your level. Mm-hmm. How many of you have met somebody and you go, ew, I don't like them. But they feel toxic to me. How many of you guys, it's not a rhetorical question, how many of you met somebody?
Yeah, you have to retreat as fast as you can.
Yeah. And he tells a story, and he said, the thing is, we know that. We know that when we entangle with somebody whose energy is different, we need to listen and we need to pay attention to the good vibes and to the bad vibes. And he's telling them a story about when he was living in Grenada, I believe, some island in the Caribbean, and he's such a happy-go-lucky, good-natured guy, Bruce Lipton. I called him Dr. Lipton when we were starting our chat, and he said, I don't know who that is. Call me Bruce. My wife called me Brucey. Well, I wasn't going to call him Brucey, but so I called him Bruce. But so he's just this good guy, nice-natured guy. Some guy moves into his apartment, and he said when this guy was moving his stuff into the apartment complex, Bruce got this really negative feeling. A guy wouldn't speak and look at him, and he was just kind of a creepy guy. But Bruce thought, oh, poor baby, I'm going to be nice to him and bring him out of his shell. And so Bruce was nice to him the whole time. He was just really friendly. But the guy just gave him the creeps. And Bruce was saying, oh, I'm judging him. I shouldn't do that. You know, he's just a human being. I'm just going to love him and be nice to him. And, you know, he'll probably respond. But he always had the ew factor, Bruce said. He was always that ew, yuck. Well, when Bruce had to move, he decided to move from Grenada to St. Thomas or one of the other islands. This guy, the creepy guy, we'll call him Earl, shows up and starts helping him load things. And Bruce is saying, oh, he's not that bad of a guy. So Bruce, now Earl's in conversation. When were you moving to, Bruce? And what are you going to do? And how are you getting your stuff there? And all of that, you know, real friendly chat. And Bruce is saying, oh, thank God, all of this energy I put into trying to be nice to this guy is paying off. He is actually a nice guy. And he said, look, Bruce says, will you help me? Or would you mind, I've got to leave tonight. Would you mind giving the keys to the locker where this is going to be stored to the moving people? And the guy said, oh, sure. In fact, the guy offered that. Well, sure. So Bruce is saying, isn't this nice? He's a nice guy after all. Well, guess what happened?
What happened?
Bruce never saw his stuff again. This creepy guy sold everything, his whole apartment full of furniture, everything. He just simply had it moved from, you know, and Bruce was away on another island by then. Where's my stuff? They go, what stuff? The stuff I had moved. What stuff you had moved? And so it just validated his first experience with this guy. He was a creepy guy. And now, sometimes we have vibrate that bad vibes with people that are creepy, but they're not good for us. We vibrate at a different level than them. And so they may not be bad, but they may be toxic for us. Republicans and Democrats don't get along, not just because they have different beliefs about what should be done, but because they vibrate at a different level. You don't always get along with your spouse or your siblings, not because they're bad, but because you vibrate at a different level. Doesn't that make sense?
It does. Does he talk about why you have the spouse that vibrates at the wrong level in the first place?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
He talks about that because we do change our vibration, and I'm going to get into that. He's saying that, let me see here, he said, here's the thing. He said, so when you entangle, again, that's with somebody else's energy, you want that interference to be constructive or good vibrations, not destructive. And you want that interaction to increase your energy, not deplete it. And I'm really aware of that. I'm super aware that there are people that make me feel great. I love to go to lunch or dinner with them, and I vibrate even at a higher level because you're putting two positive things together, and it's what we call synergy. The two people at the same vibration actually vibrate at a higher vibration. So now you understand the science behind the phenomena that you no doubt already noticed, that some people energize you and some people exhaust you. I hope that you make it a practice to surround yourself with people that are on your energetic level. And he said, not only do, this is where it gets interesting, because he said, of course, we vibrate, we're living human beings. We don't think of other things that vibrate. But again, your TV and your rug and your phone and everything else is made of these vortexes of vibrating energy. And he said the Chinese figured out long before quantum physics, thousands of years ago, that everything vibrated, and including furniture, which is where feng shui comes from. Mm. It's where how they noticed that if you have your furniture arranged in a way that blocks the energy, the vibrational waves that go out, then it's going to block your energy and you feel yucky. You come home and feel tired. Well, clutter does the same thing. Clutter has a very negative vibration. It's blocking the energy. That's why when people get rid of clutter, they experience a sense of clarity and focus and increased energy because the field around them has been cleared. Doesn't that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so he says, he's funny, he talked about not discounting what you're inner voice is saying to you when you experience somebody that you don't think vibrates at your level, to pay attention to those good vibes and negative vibes, and you'll enhance your own energy. And when you enhance your energy, you enhance your life. And he says, but here's what's a cool thing. For humans, he said, with our highly evolved big brains, we can do more than just read good and bad vibes. We can create good and bad vibes. When we broadcast thoughts from our brains, we've talked about this before, that our thoughts are things, and they vibrate at just the way stuff does. They vibrate good thoughts and bad. So when you're sending out negative thoughts, you're sending out negative vibrations. And to answer your question, Pat, about people change, I mean, part of this book is about, because the book primarily is about relationships, but it is relationships with everyone, not just your primary significant other. When you meet somebody, you're on your best behavior and you're vibrating at a high level. After you get used to that person, it's a little bit like dropping the rocks in the water, and the waves have energy, and pretty soon those waves dissipate. So you're together and you're vibrating at a really positive, high energy. And then you go back to real life, and there's garbage to be taken out, and toenails to clip, and laundry to do, and, you know, legs to shave, and bills to pay, and your energy level changes. You know, you're faced with the real world. You hit with a lawsuit, or your neighbor tree falls on your fence. And then we go into a default mode, which is our subconscious mind, and where there's some negative programming, and we go into which our vibration changes. And that's, so there's a whole, this whole book is evolving around that kind of a theory. But that's why people appear to change. They are the same person, but they go into a different part of their brain.
Yeah, terrific. What does he say about falling in love, which is a special kind of vibrational phenomenon?
Yeah, that's part of the constructive interference. You meet somebody that you really click with. We call it chemistry. Somebody that's at your vibration, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be compatible with them. You can have a vibration with somebody who has different things than what you're looking for, but you could still have a good vibration. Pat, you and I have a good vibration with each other, but we wouldn't make very good husband and wives. You're a female. I'm older than you. We have vibrations with people that wouldn't necessarily make good spouses. So that's why we like somebody and they go, what happened here? Well, there's another level of this, which is compatibility. But here's an interesting thing. He talks about our brains broadcasting signals, and our brains having electrical impulses. And we know that in our heart, does it? Because doctors measure that with EKGs to measure the electrical activity in the heart and EEGs to measure the activity in our brain. But there is a relatively new science that measures the signal that's broadcast outside of our brains, outside of our heads, and into the environment. And it reads electrical activity outside of the brain, and it's called a magnetoencephalology, magnetoencephalology. That's one word. And it measures, it's like an EKG, an EEG, which measures the brain, but it's not even touching the head. It doesn't touch the head. It's a little device that can measure the activity outside of the brain.
That is a relatively new device.
Yeah. He says this is it's a non-invasive technology, and it's used for cognitive research as well as for diagnostic purposes such as locating tumors before surgery. And he said it works because the brain generates these energy fields outside of the head. Now, there's another thing, another one called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, that generates a magnetic field as well outside of the head to induce electrical activity in a targeted part of the brain. Now, believe me, I don't want to get too scientific here. I want this is to give a foundation for what we know to be true, law of attraction stuff. But he says that Australian researchers found that when they used that TMS device to boost neural activity in an area of the brain in autistic savants, they were able to improve their drawing skills and some of their other skills. And at a Yale University study, that TMS product was able to change the brain waves. Again, it's not attached to the head. It's outside of the head, but it reduced auditory hallucinations in schizophrenics. But here's the thing. He's basically saying we can do this for ourselves. We can make these changes ourselves. These things are we can change with our thoughts. Now, as long ago as Einstein, way back there, Einstein, and when was he, in the early 1300s? Pat, you were, I mean,
not
I mean 1900s. 1900s.
Yeah.
Weren't you a schoolmate with him, Pat?
I didn't know him. But he did live in, listen, I'm near Princeton University, I'm near Princeton, New Jersey, and I taught the university. He did live right near here, and all of us in the community knew that Einstein was here, but you never saw him.
Is that right?
Yeah, right here in Princeton.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Oh, man. Yeah, he was a bit of a recluse.
And he didn't want to be sidetracked by all these, what do you call them, sightseers?
Einstein talked about a principle of quantum mechanics that Einstein way back then called non-locality or spooky action at a distance. That's in quotes, spooky action at a distance. Well, it's that quantum particles interact with in a quantum language, or it entangles with another particle no matter how many miles apart they are. In other words, our vibrations interact with somebody else's magnetic vibrations. They couple with them no matter how far away they are. We hear how twins who are very closely related, connected genetically, one twin will experience the pain of another twin. I had twin friends when I was a kid, and when one was at home, the other one had an appendicitis attack, and the one that was at home, and when the appendicitis attack, one was at the ball field playing baseball and doubled over with pain with appendicitis, the kid at home screamed and grabbed the right side of their body, where their appendix is, and the mother said, "What's going on? Oh, wow, I don't know how I hurt." And then they found out later that his brother had an appendicitis attack. And we hear that all the time. We get that feeling about somebody else. I think we used to call it ESP, extrasensory perception, but it is our brain waves interacting or coupling with others. That Lipton is talking about how that happens when it doesn't matter if you're where you are, these quantum particles possess these directional polarity, and when one particle is pointing up and another one is pointing down, they connect, and it doesn't matter how far apart they are, which may explain why circuit tapping works. We're tapping and creating vibrations to heal somebody that's someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, so physicists did this ingenious experiment to help lay people and scientists understand this non-locality thing, where he says they thought at the time it was an extremely weird concept. So the University of Michigan, some scientists, a physicist named Moonin Duan, came up with this, he set up these casino machines that would vibrate at this frequency that would cancel each other out. If one ball came up red on a roulette machine, the one across the hall, across the room, would come up black every time. He set it up so they'd be opposite. Makes you wonder how much if casinos mess around with these things that make them do that.
They probably do.
Well, Pat, you're a meditator, and so you might find that interesting about what they did with meditation. They had two people that meditated next to each other, and this was from the University of Mexico. So they meditated next to each other inside an electronically shielded Faraday chamber for 20 minutes with the intention of experimenting if they had shared in a shared meditative state. Then the meditators were placed in two separate chambers 3 meters apart, and in one experiment 14 and a half meters apart. I don't really know how far apart that is.
I don't know either, but it's the number of miles.
Oh, okay. All right. So then they hook them up to these EEG machines, and a red light.
I don't want to be quoted on that. I think so, Lindsay.
Well, it's far enough away that it can't be, they weren't sitting shoulder to shoulder. They're
not
far
at all.
Apart. Well, in fact, it's going to say that it doesn't matter where they put them. So they put them if they're in a chamber and there's no outside stimulus, and then they're hooked up to these EKG machines, and a red light was periodically flashed in the eyes of one of the meditators. Those guys in there meditating, they shine a red light, which changes, induces a unique brainwave pattern called an evoked potential. Evoked potential. I guess it's just something they could measure. And it said
I know what an evoked potential is. It's a brainwave pattern that is not a natural pattern, an innate pattern. It's a pattern that responds to an outside stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's a pebble dropped into the brain, so to speak, in a sense, and creating something. Evoked means it's not naturally there.
Right.
It's
so
evoked through some event.
Right. So they're doing it intentionally. It wouldn't have happened on its own. So they shine a light into one of the guys meditating, his counterpart, 14, 15 meters away. In one out of four cases, so 25% of the time, would excite or evoke the same wave pattern in that second meditator. In other words, it would be zero if they weren't in tune with each other.
Yeah, it's an artificially created brain.
Yeah, so there's no way that other person would have had that brain wave at all. So one out of four times that they did it, and the other three, they probably weren't in harmony or in sync. But the fact that it went out of four is significant. I mean, that's a huge amount.
Oh, it's very significant. I worked a lot with statistics when I was a researcher.
Yeah.
And one out of four times, the probability of that occurring by chance is infinitesimal.
Well, this case is zero because that red light, that brainwave pattern, does not happen without a stimulus. So it would be impossible for that other person to just have that, he didn't have a red light shown in his eye. It was his counterpart. So it would be zero. So the fact that it happened at all, one even one out of ten would have been.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So that vibrational entanglement is what Bruce Lipton's saying, is a fundamental component of the law of attraction. Isn't that interesting? Vibrational entanglement. So you're sending out a vibration about something, and that explains why that's what you bring into your life. So, good or bad, you're sending out a vibration. It entangles with a like force out there that's vibrating at it, and that brings it into your life. Now, Bruce Lipton tells about and does another experiment. He says, so if you take four, but he uses the analogy of a relationship, and some of you are involved in relationships or want to be or want to get out of them. So he says, so you take four wine glasses, X, Y, and label them W, X, Y, and Z. And they are, these wine glasses are made up of different combination of atoms. So he kind of shows an illustration in this book. He says, if he strikes a tuning fork that's designed to vibrate at the frequency of X, the same, I mean, there's, again, the goblets are numbered or labeled W, X, Y, and Z. So goblet X, let's say, vibrates at 100 megahertz. And so he makes a tuning fork that vibrates at 100 megahertz, and he strikes it. That, the two combined energies, because they are so powerful together, will break the glass, just in the way you've heard opera singers that will sing at a certain frequency and a glass breaks. That's why. Remember the two forces that are very much
aligned. Well, I don't know. I didn't follow it. Maybe you can, maybe other people didn't either. Because wait a minute. My question is, you strike this first thing, and it creates its own vibration. It is designed to match the vibration of X, that particular one called
that glass. Uh-huh, right.
That glass.
Uh-huh.
And when you strike it, the glass breaks.
Right.
Because the glass, now there's this missing question, a missing step here. The glass breaks because the glass is not designed to handle a higher doubling of its energy, or
exactly.
Maybe it wasn't doubling, but increase of its energy.
It's designed to vibrate at 100 hertz. When something else is vibrating at the same thing, it amplifies its own vibration.
And it is not built to handle
exactly.
The amplification, and it bursts.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So it's saying that goblet, is that amplified energy causes them, meaning the tuning fork and the glass, to vibrate faster and faster. So much power is created by the energized vibrating atoms that the goblet actually explodes. That's constructive interference of the kind you experience on your honeymoon when you and your partners are entangled in the best possible way. That's what he says.
No, why? Well, why wouldn't the partners explode then?
Well,
why would they even laugh?
Because unlike a natural thing, that glass is set up to vibrate at that. I mean, that's what's holding its atoms together. It's vibrating at that. You introduce something artificial that's vibrating at the same speed that amplifies it, and it can't do anything to change it. It breaks.
Oh, but the people on the honeymoon are more flexible.
Right. Think about it. Sometimes it's exhausting to be around somebody. After a while, you just go, I'm exhausted. I've been laughing so much or being with you people. I need to go home and rest.
Right.
It in a good way. I mean, it adds to your energy. In some
yeah,
ways.
But it didn't explode the people in the meantime.
No, it's not going to explode people.
But
it's not mean.
But there's a reason. I bet he goes into that in more detail, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah. He's talking about
why people survive their honeymoon.
We can't maintain. We don't have the ability to maintain the exact vibration of something for a suspended amount of time. I'm thinking if we could tune into somebody and vibrated exactly their vibration, maybe they would explode. But their vibration is going to go up and down a little bit, depending from moment to moment, a little bit. So will yours. Whereas a glass and a tuning fork are very precise.
They're rigid. They're carved in stone.
Right. And the point is, the two things that vibrate at the same vibration and are amplified. You get it. They vibrate at even a higher power. Which is really interesting because there's a sofa out there with your name on it someplace that you love. If you can tune into that vibration of that sofa, it attracts it to you. And by focusing on it is how you think about it, you see it, or any Oakley cowboy boots. You focus on it and you see it and you smell it and you think about having it and you get into that vibration with that and it ends up in your house, so to speak.
And he talks about this we're talking about it. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and he goes on with that same wine glass theory, and he says, you know, if you put a picture on the wine glass of a happy, loving couple on glass F, you know, that are kissing and loving and on their honeymoon, and a picture of, on glass W with people screaming at each other, and on the glass, on the wine glass Y, the guy's drunk and she's looking off going, how did I get stuck with this jerk? And glass Z, there are two people fighting in court blaming each other for their problems. He's saying, you focus on one of those things in your own relationship, how horrible it is, and you're going to end up with more of that in the relationship. It's just what you talk about. You focus on something negative, you're going to get more of the negative. He said, so these goblet analogies is to illustrate how important it is to shift your passionately negative, fearful, angry thoughts and emotions to passionately positive ones in order to create what you want in your life. So if you could create the goblet version of the relationship that you want or the person you want by making sure your thoughts that you're broadcasting are exactly what you want, then you're going to be attracting them. If you're saying, I don't want somebody who's angry and selfish and uncommitted, and or I don't want the kind of relationship I've had in the past with my past two boyfriends, then that's what you're going to attract. Does any of this sound familiar?
It sounds a bit familiar. And even if the other person is a real person in your life and suddenly gets negative that day, if you push against it, you're going to create more of that,
right.
Whereas if you go beyond it and tune into the potential that you know is there in the relationship and you've experienced it before, and you are actually bypassing, for them, helping them bypass getting stuck in that vibration.
That's right. When you expect somebody to behave a certain way, you are actually amplifying, your vibration goes down to their level, you're amplifying their bad behavior.
Yeah. Yes,
because you start vibrating at them, they start yelling, and you yell back, you now, that's why fights escalate into violence often.
Yes.
You're vibrating, and it's also why when you're lovingly with somebody, you just love them even more, and you just, you know, there's this wonderful harmony thing. Pat, remember the meeting we were at last summer in New York where you got your Lifetime Achievement Award for Tapping Excellence, and we celebrated.
I remember. It was wonderful. Yes.
Well, remember the energy in that room. People were just pouring out love to you, and I mean, you couldn't even function. You were a little giddy or something.
A little spacey.
It was because you had all of this positive energy focused at you. It was almost overwhelming, I think, we were talking about. I think she's overwhelmed because you're going, what kind of cake is this? No, Pat, you're going, cut him a piece of cake and, you know, you're holding your trophy in one hand.
I really was bewildered.
I think it's why when so many things happen, people say, I don't even remember getting the Academy Award. It was just so much, because people are just throwing this love at you, and you're vibrating at a higher rate than they are, and our brains are going, this is great, but I'm on overload in a good way. Here's the next part.
Sold the book to me, my dear. I am going to go right after this broadcast. I mean, right after this telecast.
I'm going to tell you
I'm going to Amazon and buy it. I don't even know whether I'll get to you, but I'll get to Amazon.
Well, listen, here's the thing. I'm not trying to sell his book. I'm just saying he validates all the stuff we're talking about, and you're going to like this next part.
Oh, you told me I'm hearing him tomorrow with you. I wouldn't miss it. You've got to tell us how we can do that.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Here's the next thing that's important. He's saying, so there you are vibrating and all of this stuff, and you're wanting something. He said, but there's a little something that can get in the way. It's your beliefs about what's possible. So he said, an interesting series of experiments by a parapsychology researcher and an anthropologist, Marilyn Schlitz, who's director of the Institute for Noetic Sciences and British Parapsychology, and this British parapsychology skeptic. You guys know what parapsychology is. That's kind of what we're talking about, the outside of the box fit stuff. The skeptic, and you know, we've all heard of them, a psychologist named Richard Wiseman, they had these two guys doing experiments, and they suggest that the purpose of this premise is that our thoughts, the researchers broadcast play a role in this rigorous scientific experiment. So Wiseman, the skeptic, and Schlitz, you can really mess up with that name, Schlitz, the other scientist, elaborated on these studies to determine whether a person can detect that someone is staring at them when they don't see them. You know, have you ever had that? You're in a room by yourself, and then little hairs go up on the back of your head, and you just feel like somebody's looking at you.
Yeah, and you turn around and look right in their eyes.
Right. Yeah. And so it was just a real simple experiment. So these experiments established that when Schlitz, that's the one who believed that this she could detect this, she was the one doing the staring, there was statistically significant effect, meaning people would know that she was staring at her. When Wiseman, the skeptic, was doing the staring, there was zero effect. Nobody noticed. And that's because the believer, Schlitz, started off with the premise that the experiment would work, and it did. And Wiseman, the skeptic, the non-believer, started off with the premise wouldn't work, and of course, it didn't. So the experiment was the same, but their belief...
There was a very famous series called The Sheep and the Goats, series of experiments in parapsychology done at Duke University long before that. I mean, way earlier in the 20th, I guess. And what they found was even more interesting to me. They found that people who believed positively were able to, what the experiment was. It was way high in terms of their ability to catch these, they were sending pictures, mental pictures over the airwaves, so to speak. From mind to mind. They were so significantly high that it was just absolutely mind-boggling. But the ones that were skeptical were not just not significant. They were significantly negative. They went opposite to the picture, opposite to the thing, significantly way beyond chance, so that they produced, by their negative attitude, not just a neutral thing, it didn't work, but it worked negatively, and it's a very famous and beautifully conducted experiment. I mean, I was a researcher myself for many years, and I don't bother to do much or any research now. I don't have time, but I must say the research was conducted impeccably, perfect.
There are a lot of researchers, things out there like that. And he, Bruce Lipton, goes on to talk about that in different aspects, not just relationships, but in projecting what we want, instead of saying, well, I want a good relationship, I want a great relationship, being specific about it and saying what you want in that relationship. You know, I want somebody that's caring and loving and supportive and accepting and intelligent, and the more specific you can be, the more likely you'll get it.
Does he explain why specificity?
Yes.
I agree, but what does he say why?
Yeah, because every one of those words, every one of those thoughts has a vibration. So here's an example. It's being specific, it changes, you add one word to, let's say, a great relationship. That's very nebulous. It has kind of not a low vibration, but not a high one. You say a loving, supportive, kind, caring, compassionate person or relationship, even the sound of that, which, that sounds great. It's the difference between saying, look at this, people say this all the time, I want to lose weight, I want to lose 50 pounds. That has a really low vibration. It sounds heavy. Oh, God, I have to starve. I have to eat cardboard. I'm going to be hungry all the time. It's going to be difficult. What if it doesn't work? And I'll start that on the first of the month or next year or sometime. As opposed to saying, I want to weigh 130 pounds and fit into a size 6 or 8 dress or 40 size suit or whatever it is, and feel good about myself, having great energy, fit into airplane seats and concert seats, and have a perfect blood pressure and blood sugar, and live a long time and be able to run around and chase my grandkids and da-da-da. So which sounds better? I have to lose 50 pounds or I want to, I see myself.
You know what I'm thinking? That actually the negative one, I want to lose 50 pounds, if it follows the pattern of the sheep and goats experiment, where the negative was not only neutral, but went significantly negative, they could gain.
Yes, in fact, that's why they say people put on weight. They lose the weight, and then they focus, oh, I hope I don't gain it back. I hope this doesn't, I hope I don't go back to my old habits. I hope this doesn't screw up. I hope I don't fail. And, of course, they're focused on the fear of it returning, and it comes back not only the amount, but an additional 5%. This is why they're focused on the wrong thing. And it says, so if, and he's going on to say, so if you can attract the ideal kind of relationship or whatever in your life, then if you wallow in instead the past ones, well, I'll never get married again because I've had two and they were horrible and it didn't work and they cheated on me and blah, 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 and you stay in that place and you create more of that and you end up attracting more. And people say, well, that's not fair. You're blaming me for saying I attracted this mess in my life, my debt and my lawsuit and the death of my friend and all of that other stuff, and it's blaming the victim. And Bruce Lipton says, if this sounds like blaming the victim, you know, when people say, well, how did you attract that? And I do that to myself. He said, if it sounds like blaming the victim, it's not. If we have been unaware of how our thoughts and beliefs influence our world, then in truth, how can we be blamed or guilty for our past reactions? If you don't know that what you think is causing your problems or what you're focusing on is bringing stuff you don't want, then you're not guilty of it. So there's no blame or guilt or shame. However, it's when you know something, how and why something works, and yet, and armed with that knowledge, you still engage in behavior that's destructive to yourself or others, then you aren't just the victim, you're the perpetrator. You're causing those problems. You know better, and you go, but you still stay on that. So there's a whole section on how do we get rid of our limiting beliefs. Well, duh, we know that. We tap them away. And he and I talked about that. I'm disappointed he didn't mention EFT more in his book, although he did mention it, he does mention it in the back as one of the resources. I also asked him, and I can't remember if this was off mic or not. We talked quite a while before and after the interview, but I said I had this belief that my partner and I, Zoe, that did workshops, and we did workshops together, that we decided that by tapping, when we're tapping, we are sending little vibrations through our system, and that we are changing our vibrations and changing our thoughts, how we think. And so we start about tapping on, for instance, letting go of negative beliefs. Even though I believe that this will never work for me, it's going to be hard, it'll never happen, and what if I fail? We change that to letting go of those and tapping in. Yeah, I allow it to work. I choose to make it work. I choose to win. I choose to believe that I can do whatever I want. You know, changing those beliefs. That by tapping, we're changing our vibration. And even changing the state of our mind. Bruce Lipton says the way to change a negative belief, a limiting belief, is by, and hypnosis is a good way. And I ask him, can tapping put you into that same state of frame, state of mind, but you're fully conscious, you're not hypnotized, but it's changing your brain waves so that you're more susceptible and you allow that reprogramming of your subconscious that has these beliefs that came from somebody else. He said,
well,
absolutely.
It's that all true, of course. But we are at 2 minutes or something after 10, and we need to know how. I want to be on that call tomorrow because
okay.
I want to experience it.
TinyEarl.com. Put that in the browser. No, www. TinyEarl, TinyEarl.com /. Honeymoon Effect Interview, all no spaces. If you forget that, or lose it or typing it wrong and you're getting an error, go to my website page, right, where all my media stuff is, to proeftradio.com, proeftradio.com, and you'll see.
Would you mention in
the times, but it's at 5 p.m. specific time, which is 8 p.m. Eastern time.
If we miss it, we get the replay on where?
The same, at the same tiny URL or on my media page.
Perfect.